Welcome back! In this second presentation on stocks, we'll discuss securities marketplaces. In other words, where do you buy and sell these things? And then we'll start to dig into the different indices and how we measure how well the stock market's doing as a whole, and then we'll start looking at individual stocks and numerical measures for individual stocks. And we hope to show you that it's really not as hard as people make it out to be. As Warren Buffett says, investing is simple, but it ain't easy. And we've already discussed that, right? The intellectual part is relatively straightforward. What's difficult is the emotional part and predicting the future, because nobody can predict the future accurately. It's easy to predict the future inaccurately, and a lot of people do it, and get paid pretty well, and maybe you can be one of them. Anyway, let's start on slide number 19. What are securities marketplaces? What a silly name. It's just where these things traded. That's what it means. Securities is just, it's a fancy term that means financial assets that can be traded between investors. And the marketplace, the securities exchange, is where this happens. And for decades, for almost 200 years, over 200 years, the place to be was the New York Stock Exchange, the big board. But you know what? It's now owned by a derivatives trading firm in Atlanta. And what are derivatives? Don't even bother with them. They're just scary ways to lose a lot of money quickly. Yeah, and then the American Exchange, it used to be called the Curb. Why? Because it started out on the curb outside the New York Stock Exchange. Well, they got their own building, thankfully, because it's cold in the wintertime out on the streets. But then they got purchased by the NASDAQ, which then gave them up, and then they got purchased by the New York Stock Exchange, and they changed the name to the New York Stock Exchange MKT. I'm sorry, MKT Market, I guess it's supposed to be, MKT. Anyway, but what happened? They were never very big, right? The American Exchange, they were the little kid down the street. But the NASDAQ, the National Association of Securities Dealers Automated Quotation System, which they don't want you to remember, that's what it originally meant for. They meant that they just wanted to be called the NASDAQ. They got big. Yeah. And that's where the technology stocks like Microsoft and Apple and Intel, that's where they live. And so now it's a two-horse race, the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ. The over-the-counter markets, folks, stay away from these places. If anybody tries to get you to buy a stock, a penny stock, on the bulletin boards or the pink sheets, just stay away. If that's the wrong side of town, the red light district, the wrong side of the tracks, it's just the wrong place to be. And so let's read. For hundreds of years, these marketplaces, and for the New York Stock Exchange and the New York Stock Exchange MKT, American Exchange, they were centralized locations. But that's the old technology. With today's technology, the vast majority of transactions occur electronically. No one's yelling and screaming at one another anymore. There's a little bit of that. There's a few transactions that still occur there, but really, I think they just keep it around for show. I really do. So they have something to show on the television at night. So when you go online and buy and sell stocks, or your broker does it for you, or your mutual fund does it for you, it's all happening electronically now. Yeah. Slide number 20. To gauge the current condition of stocks in general, financial professionals have created various stock market indices. It's just a list of stocks, folks. That's all it is. We call them stock market indexes, indices, averages. And by far the most popular, even though it's not a very good one, is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Dow. Yeah, it's the granddaddy of them all, started in 1896. But the problem with it is it's only 30 companies. Now, these are some of the largest and best-known companies, but still, it's only 30 companies. So it has a tendency to not reflect very well the overall market conditions, although people... you look at it for the market. And what we would do in the face-to-face class now is jump to this handout that I give to say, hey, I'm going to give you $10,000, you know, 80 some years ago, okay? A long time ago. And, which company would you pick? Okay? So, you know, you can do that on your own. It's in Canvas and it's also on the website. So do that one on your own, but don't peek, all right? Choose one company and listen to the commentary and then, well, how'd you do? The better measure, but the one you don't hear as much of, if you follow the stock market, you're going to hear about it, but the one that they often don't talk about on the news is the Standard & Poor's 500. That traditionally is a list of the 500 largest companies in the United States. Now, a few of them are foreign because some foreign companies have purchased very large United States companies, but they're mostly United States companies. They're big companies. And this one's a better gauge. Although it's not perfect either, because nothing is. And we discussed the imperfections in the Business 123 Introduction to Investments class. The NASDAQ. Remember we talked about the NASDAQ? Well, the NASDAQ Composite Index is a list of stocks that's on the NASDAQ. And most of them are high-tech companies. Not all. You know, Costco is on the NASDAQ, Starbucks. So not all the companies are high-tech companies. But when we want to see how the technology part of the economy is doing and the companies that make up that technology part, we often point to the NASDAQ. So these are the big three, and you'll often hear, they always talk about the Dow. I don't know why, because it's not that good. But they'll also include the NASDAQ. And sometimes they'll have all three, the Standard & Poor's, the Dow, and the NASDAQ. Now, there are others, though, that are going to become more important to us in the next chapter because the world is not just the S&P 500. And on slide 21, we see a few of the others that are important, but you don't hear too much about them until you get involved in the industry or you start investing. And the first one, which I hate the name, they used to call it the Wilshire 5000. Now they've called it the Dow. The Dow Jones somehow made a deal with Dow Jones, by the way, they're the folks that published the Wall Street Journal, but they're now owned by Fox News, so figure that one out. Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index. Huh? Well, it started out as the Wilshire 5000. That's what it was called, but that's not what it's called anymore. And it varies up and down. At one time it was 7,000 stocks. Now it's down to about 4,000. But the idea is we want to get the large companies, that's the S&P 500, and the medium-sized and the small companies. So you'll sometimes hear people call this the entire stock market or the total stock market. Yeah, the big companies, medium-sized, and the large companies. And we'll discuss that, you know, later on. What's the Russell 2000? Well, this is meant to represent just the small and the medium-sized companies, huh? What do? They take the top 3,000 companies by size, and they lop off the top 1,000. So how are companies in the small and medium-sized world doing? And then, all we've been discussing is the United States. What about outside the United States? Well, many years ago, a company called Capital International, the division of Capital, hey, you've never heard of them, but they're very big and they're actually a very good company. They started investing outside the United States and they said, you know what? You know, we want to have some kind of measurement for what's going on outside the United States. So they created the World Index. But then they were measuring themselves. Yeah, not a good idea. Definitely a conflict of interest. So they sold it to Morgan Stanley. So that's why MSCI stands for Morgan Stanley Capital International World Index. And that was the entire world, the United States and everybody else. But, you know, many years ago, that was only a few parts of the world, Western Europe, Canada, South Africa, Australia, Japan, Hong Kong, Singapore. And so instead of just changing it so that it would include, you know, South America and Eastern Europe and China and India and the Philippines and Taiwan and Korea, they created a new index called the MSCI All Country World Index. Now, they didn't ask me. I mean, I would have told them, well, just change the world index so it's the world index. So people don't have to remember all country world index. I mean, the goofball. But, hey, that's their business, and they don't care about what I think. And the other one, the MSCI EAFE, and that's how it's pronounced, by the way, EAFE, stands for Europe, Australia, and the Far East. So, in other words, how are companies doing outside the United States, right? And again, they never changed the EAFE. They just let, you know, they had a Europe, Canada, Australia, South Africa, who else? Japan, Hong Kong, Australia, of course, Singapore. And they never changed it. They just kept it, and they created a new one called the MSCI All Country World XUSA. How's this supposed to remember that? I mean, it's a dumb name, but hey, that's what it is. And so these you don't hear too much about, but they're important because we want to know how the world is doing. The small company stocks, all the stocks in the United States, how's the world doing, including the United States, and the world without the United States. And so I follow them, certainly, and most professionals do. Slide 22. Have you heard the terms bull market, bear market? Well, we won't get into the entomology of how that's the right word, right? Entomology of how these words were created. But bull markets mean everybody's happy. More investors buying stocks, stock market increases, the economy's doing well. Bear markets are when the market goes down and more investors are selling stocks, so the stocks decline. And this is normally defined as a 20% or more decline. If it falls 5, 10, 15%, that's just a correction. Whatever, it's going down. And for whatever reason, sometimes it's because people get spooked. They just get, it's a bit of a joke because there's an old saying that there's three emotions that rule the markets. Fear, greed, and greed. It's a joke because greed usually wins out. But sometimes fear wins out, so fear and greed. And sometimes people just get frightened and everybody heads for the exits. Yeah, a lot of times it's a real reason. You know, the economies are tanking for whatever reason. And people decide, you know what, I don't want to invest in stocks now. But those turn out to be, bear markets turn out to be the best times to invest, folks, historically, because when do you want to buy? Right, you want to buy high. You want to buy low. You want to sell high, you want to buy low. But again, you know, emotions come into the game. And, of course, if the market goes down and stays down and becomes basically worthless, and it doesn't really matter where your money is because that means the whole economy has failed and we'll all be digging for beetle grubs and eating bark for dinner, boiling bark for, let's not go there. Slide 23, stock analysis. Okay, where do we start, right? Well, Benjamin Graham was Warren Buffett's teacher, and he wrote in a phenomenal book, The Intelligent Investor. Don't read it as your first book, okay, because it's pretty weighty. There's a few other books, One Up on Wall Street, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. Those are better to start with. But he said it very succinctly, show me the numbers. Just see it. Show me how it's doing. But there are dozens and dozens of numeric measures. And so we're only going to learn a few of them, folks. Some of the most popular over the years have been capitalization, book value, earnings per share, price-to-earnings ratio, and the dividend yield. So let's take a look at these. And as we go through this in the face-to-face class, we would, of course, be going to the worksheet because there's a worksheet for Chapter 12. And it turns out that the calculations are a whole lot easier than the bond calculations. So you can follow along in the presentation and do them, pause the presentation, or just, do it afterwards. But do them, okay? Please do them. And what I hope you will find is you'll say, this isn't that hard. And the truth is it isn't. The understanding of the stocks and the measurements and the like, they're really not that hard. What is difficult is simply adding your judgment about which companies to buy because the world is always changing and it's very difficult. It's impossible to accurately predict the future, as we've said. If if we knew what was going to happen, we wouldn't call it the future, right? It's easy to look at the past and say, well, gee, I should have sold, I should have bought. But it's harder when you're looking into the fog of the future. Slide 24. Market capitalization is a very important number that people just don't even bother looking at. Everyone looks at the stock price. That's the wrong thing to do, folks. It's really not a smart thing to do just to look at the price. You have to look at the value of the company. And how do you get that? That's what the capitalization is. You take the number of shares multiplied times the current price of the stock. See, the current price of the stock is meaningless unless you know how many shares there are. That's what the company is actually worth. If you wanted to buy the company, if you wanted to buy the whole company, that's what you'd need. Actually, you need a little more because as soon as you started buying all the shares, the price would start going up, and that's the problem. But anyway, there are three major groups, the papa bears, the mama bears, and the baby bears. I don't know if that helps you use it. But large cap stocks are stocks are generally considered anything over $10 billion. Now, you're hearing more and more people, this number changes over time as companies get larger, you're hearing more and more people say, nah, it's got to be at least $15 billion before it's a large cap stock. Well, you decide. You know, you pick either one. If it's a $10 billion, $12 billion stock and you say, well, it's large cap, I'll accept it. If you say it's mid cap, the medium sized company, I'll accept that also. When you get above $100 billion, you get into the rarefied world of what are called mega cap stocks. It's a subset of large cap. So you don't have to remember it. If you do, great. If you don't worry about it. But these are big companies. You know, the brand names that you've all heard of, and certainly the tech titans, as they're often called, like Apple and Microsoft and Facebook and Google and Netflix and Amazon. These are all mega cap stocks. But you don't have to remember that. Just remember large. Anything above $10 billion. Now, in our class, we'll do between $1 and $2 billion to $10 billion for the mama bears, the mid-cap stocks. And you've probably heard of some of them, but most of them you will not have heard of. Again, some people will say, no, it's got to be at least $4 or $5 billion, up to $15 billion to be mid-cap. And either one is up to you. You decide. I'll take either. And then when you get into the small cap stocks, most of these companies you've never heard of. Some of them you have, but most of them you've never heard of. And they're anywhere from, you know, $100 million or so up to $1 or $2 billion. But again, people are saying, no, it has to be up to $3 or $4 billion before it's leaving small caps. Anything below about $100 million is considered micro cap. It's still a small cap stock. You decide if you want to remember that, but it's a subset, micro cap. And these companies, you know, most of them you've never, ever heard of. And you know, you make a lot of money off of these things, folks, but you can also lose everything because every big company at one time was small, right? Obviously, by definition, you got to start somewhere. But normally, no, folks. Many of them disappear. And you'll hear people say that small cap stocks have done better than large cap stocks over time. And they're right in one respect, and they're wrong in another respect. The problem is they often don't count the ones that just disappear. It's called survivorship bias. And so with survivorship bias, the ones who disappear don't get counted. And so that's why it looks like that small company stocks have done better. But the truth is, if you're a good stock picker and you pick small company stocks well, you're going to do well. But it's going to be very volatile. Now, penny stocks. These are companies we shouldn't even mention. We just shouldn't even mention them in polite company because, folks, this is the way to get poor quickly. Stay away from them. Those are the stocks that are on the bulletin boards and the pink sheets that we talked about. Just stay away. And they say anywhere from $1 to $5, but that's not necessarily true. Some of them are pennies, literally, 5 cents or 7 cents. And sure, if it goes up to 12 cents, you're going to make a lot of money, but it's more likely to go down to 1 cent or a whole lot less. And we see some examples on the website and in Canvas. You'll see some examples of just there's thousands of them, folks, and they're all almost all scams. Yeah, almost all. Stay away. Slide 25. So here's an example. We have $50 price. Well, how much is the company worth? Well, we don't know until we know how many shares are out there. How many shares are out there and being traded? If you have 2 million shares, that's $50 times 2 million or $100 million worth of market capitalization. This is a small cap stock. The stock price, for the most part, is irrelevant. You must look at the market cap to see what the value of the company is, and we'll see some examples later. Okay? So if you wanted to own this stock, you'd have to have $100 million in your pocket and go down to the exchange and say, I want to buy this. Well, as we said, it doesn't really work that way. If one company wants to take over another company, or somebody, an individual wants to take over another company, they go to the exchange and they say, look, you know, we're interested in buying this company. So we'll make what is called a tender offer. I don't know why it's called that, but anyway. And so you have to come up, for example, this stock we're selling for $50. You have to basically come up with 55 or 56 or a little bit more, anywhere from 10 to 20% more. And then what they do is they have a set methodology for announcing this. And then when they announce it, if investors believe it's a real offer that this entity, this company or the individual person or group of people can actually come through with the goods, the price will snap right to that, or maybe a little bit below that, or maybe a little above that, that number. So you think there's some hanky-panky going on? Right. Somebody could just come along and say, yeah, I'll pay $55 a share. The price jumps to 55, and then it turns out that they were just blowing smoke, and the price falls back to 50. Yeah, there's a lot of shenanigans that go on down on Wall Street, folks. Nothing's perfect, and it reminds me of that famous bank robber who didn't really say what he was told, everyone says he says, but he was supposedly asked, why do you rob banks? I think his name was Willie Sutton, right? Willie Horton? I can't remember. Why do you rob banks? And supposedly said, that's where the money is. He didn't really say it. But anyway, it's a cute story, right? Because this is where the money is. Slide 26, book value. Now, this is an interesting one because this should look familiar to many of you folks. This is the net worth of a company determined by deducting all the liabilities from the corporation's assets and then dividing the remainder by the number of outstanding shares of common stock. So in other words, remember our net worth statement? Assets minus liabilities equals net worth. Well, this is the same thing, but for a corporation. You take the assets, you subtract all the liabilities, and you have a number, and then you divide that by the number of shares, and that tells you how much each individual share is. And it's rarely close to the stock price, often 1/5 or 1/6 or less, right? Why? And it makes sense. It makes sense that it would be. Because if you're a company, the fact that you're in business and earning money means that your worth is more than just the assets on the books. That's what we call book value. If think of a pizza shop or a shoe shop. The pizza shop, what are they? They got pots and pans, and then they got some nice fixtures and all the furniture and the like, and the oven is the most expensive thing, right? But if they sold all those pieces, the company would not be worth what it's worth, the fact that it's earning money, the fact that it's a going concern, as the IRS uses the term. So this is true of companies, and we're going to see some examples. Now, every once in a while, the stock price is lower than the book value. It's very rare, but it happens. And when this happens, there's a real danger of the company being raided for the assets and put out of business. So you're working for a company that's been around for over 100 years, and things have changed, the technology has changed, and the company really hasn't kept up. And the price keeps getting lower and lower and lower. But this company has lots of assets. Well, once the price goes below the book value, assuming that the book value is a bona fide number, bona fide meaning real, you know, it's not just on the books by the accountants, then these corporate raiders come in. You might have heard of them, corporate raiders, private equity takeover artists, private equity firms. and they will come in, buy 50% plus one shares, which means they run the company now, they can vote anything into being, and they put the company out of business, sell all the assets, pay off all the debts, and then walk away. Now, how would you feel? You've worked there for 22 years, and now you're out of a job because they liquidated the company. You'd be pretty upset, wouldn't you? And you'd go to your politician and say, why are these people allowed to do what they're doing? This is outrageous. Why are they putting profits over people? And the economists and the takeover artists, if they deemed you worthy enough to speak to, which they probably don't because they've already left on their private jets, they would say, no, you don't understand capitalism. That company needed to be plowed under like a field by a farmer. That capital, which is a fancy word for resources, was not being utilized efficiently. It needed to go out of business. Great, you know, now I'm out of a job. And that's why we have unemployment insurance, folks. We don't have unemployment insurance to pay people not to work. No, that's not what it's for. Now, do some people game the system and take advantage of it? Oh, sure, you know, nothing's perfect. In a perfect world, and there ain't no such thing, people would not do that, but some people do. But the idea is we want this to happen. We want that capital, including the people who are working there, to be better utilized toward furthering the success of our economy. I know it sounds like an advertisement. I apologize. But that's the idea. Now, is it perfect? Of course not. Nothing is. But that's the reason we promote that. We want that to happen. Slide 27. Earnings per share and price to earnings ratio. Now, these two are very important because we can use the earnings per share and think of our little stock, our one share of stock, as a little economic engine. How much is our one share of stock earning for us? Well, the calculation is fairly straightforward, and we're going to do one or two, but you don't really have to. You just look it up on the Infernal Net. But corporations, after-tax earnings divided by a number of shares, and the idea in the world of investing is to look for growing earnings per share. It's a very dynamic system. We want growth, right? Yeah, well, sometimes companies are growing their earnings very quickly and the stock price becomes very volatile. And other companies that are not growing their earnings very quickly, the stock price is far less volatile. But it's not as exciting, right? That's growth is what people want. Then you take those earnings per share and you relate it back to the price. And this sounds funny, PE, price to earnings ratio, physical education. No, price to earnings ratio. And it's often written as P/E or just PE. This is the most watched market statistic, stock market as a whole and then individual stocks. You take the price of a share of stock and you divide it by the earnings. Usually over the last 12 months, but sometimes they do future earnings. Well, you don't know what the future is going to be, so they estimate it. And a low price to earnings ratio usually means the stock is a less risky investment, whereas a higher price to earnings ratio means that the stock is going to be a higher risk. Now, is it worth it? Yeah, that's the problem, and we'll see. We'll see in 3 to 5 years if it turns out that it was a good idea to go with the low-risky stock or the high-risky stock. And why would we want to own a business? Well, because businesses are in business to earn money. So let's take a look at this example. Here's a company that's earned $2,500,000. Now, is that a lot of money? Yeah, to you and me it is. But we don't know what it means for this corporation until we know how many shares are outstanding. So you take the $2.5 million and divide it by the 5 million shares, and you get 50 cents earnings per share, EPS, which means that every single one of your shares, whether you own 10 or 1,000 or 10,000, everyone is earning 50 cents, like a little engine. Does that make sense? Yeah. No pun intended, folks. And so EPS is 50 cents a share. Now, let's take this 50 cents per share that we just calculated on slide 29 and relate it back to the price. the price of the stock, let's say it's $10, example. So you take $10 divided by the 50 cents and you get a PE of 20. Now don't put a percent sign, don't put a dollar sign, it is unitless. There's no unit to it, but some people will throw a percent sign in. It's not, it doesn't belong. Is that high? Is that low? Well, let's take a look at slide 30. Historically, a high PE ratio, a PE ratio of 20 or above was considered high and reserved only for the fastest growing stocks. You see, the faster the stock is growing, the higher PE you'll see with the stock associated. Why? Because people are bidding up the price relative to the earnings because they're expecting the earnings to grow. And historically, 5 to 15 was considered average. But at different times of our history, and now, for example, PEs of 30, 40, 50 were not uncommon. And I'll never, never forget looking down in the height of the internet bubble in the late 90s at the computer and seeing PE for eBay at 10,000. And I said to myself, this ain't going to continue. No way. Right? And when the market falls, right, PE ratios fall dramatically. When the market rises, PE ratios rise. The price-to-earnings ratio essentially tells you what the market believes the prospects for a company are. It doesn't mean they're right. Often they are, not all the time. So a high PE company, investors believe that the future for this company is quite bright. A low PE company, very, very pessimistic about the future for that company. And it also gives you an idea of how long in years it will take the company to earn back its price. Not that that's important, but it's something to think about. If you have a PE of 20, that means in 20 years, assuming nothing changes, and of course it's changing all the time, it'll take them 20 years to earn back the price. PE of 6 takes 6 years. A PE of 10,000, right, that's how you know that that was way too high. And of course eBay went on to lose 80-90% of its value. It didn't disappear. It's still around, unlike many of the other internet companies that are long gone and in the dustbin of history. Now, slide 31, the dividend yield. Oh, boy, do we love dividends, folks. We talked about dividends, right? Dividends are cash in your pocket, folks. They put money in your pocket. Well, they don't send you a check anymore. It's all electronic. But still, it's very cool. Dividends. Companies can pay dividends. They don't have to. They're optional. But they are distributions of the earnings. And the dividend yield is the yearly dollar amount generated by a stock divided by the current market price. In other words, this allows us to compare the stock to a savings account or a bond. And historically, they were in the 4, 5, 6% range for well-established companies. But now 2 to 3% is typical. Many pay nothing because why? They need the money to grow the company. So companies that are growing very rapidly would not pay any dividends. But other companies that have been around for decades, yeah, sure, they're paying great dividends. And some are paying more than 3, 4, 5. We'll take a look. We'll see some examples. Dividends don't lie, dear students. Dividends are cool. Slide 32. Here's an example. If we have $1.50 in dividends coming from this stock, great. How much did we have to pay for those dividends? Well, $87.50. So you take $1.50 divided by $87.50, and it turns out that that stock is paying 1.71%, which is more than what some banks are paying, right? But what's the difference? The bank account is guaranteed by the full faith and credit by the United States government, right? So you're not going to lose money. But what could happen to the price of the stock? It could go to zero. It happens every once in a while with companies, Kodak, GM, when they went bankrupt. But it doesn't often happen. But the price will be volatile, folks. And so next year, you know, the price might be $40 or it might be $120. That's stock investing. But right now, it's paying us $1.7%, which is not bad. Oops, well, let me be clear about one thing. When I say it doesn't happen often, I'm talking about companies that have been around a long time, that have been paying dividends for a long time. The brand names that you know about, and some you don't know about because they don't necessarily deal with the general public, maybe business to business. But there are other companies, more speculative companies, brand new companies, small companies that go out of business all the time, folks. So we have to go back and, again, determine what's our risk tolerance when you invest in a company like Johnson & Johnson or Home Depot. It's very different than investing in the latest high-tech startup that may or may not become the next Forrest Book or Titter. So there are various degrees of stock investing risk and return. And I hope we've made that clear, and we're going to discuss it even more as we go along. So now let's take a look at some real-life examples of companies you may or may not have heard of. You ever hear of Walmart and Costco, those two little mom-and-pop shops that are all over the world? And so look at the numbers. We will discuss them in detail, but is it scary? Does it turn you off? Or does it make you interested? That's a good thing to think about. Analyze your emotions as we discuss these. So you take a look at the price of Walmart versus Costco on April 11th, 2019, and you say, wait a minute, is Costco worth more than Walmart? Intuitively, you kind of know, no, that's not right. Wait, hang on a minute. You'll see that you're right. Walmart's bigger. Look at the earnings per share, $2.26 and $7.79. So we take the earnings, price divided by the earnings, and it turns out that the P.E. for Walmart is 44.5 around there, whereas Costco is 31. Now, what did we say about P.E.? You know, anything above 20 means that investors are pretty excited about the prospects in the future. 40 is pretty high. So what are investors saying about the prospects of Walmart versus Costco? Well, they're pretty excited about both companies, but they're really excited about Walmart. Now, are they correct? Well, come back in 3 years and we'll see if they are or not. Exactly. It's about the future, folks. We take a look at what it is now and we say, well, who do you think is going to do better going forward? The book value, we see, is far less than the price. Why? Because investors are saying, look, these companies are worth far more intact than if you were to sell off all the assets, pay off all the debts, and liquidate the company. So, and that's true, isn't it? Right, exactly. What do these companies actually own? Well, they don't actually own the buildings. They release them. I mean, some of them they probably own, but most of them they lease from real estate investment trusts and their inventory. But what's more important? Right, their distribution systems, their brand names, the fact that people trust these companies and go to them all over the world. That's where the value is. Now, the dividends per share are $2.12 for Walmart and $2.28 for Costco. So if we divide the dividends per share by the price, we get about 2.2% for Walmart, which isn't bad. You know, it's better than a savings account, but less than 1% for Costco. So investors are saying, you know, I'm willing to take less dividends from Costco than I am from Walmart. But look at the market capitalization. Walmart is a mega cap company, almost $300 billion of market capitalization. Whereas Costco is getting up there, it's almost $100 billion, which gets you into that rarefied air of mega cap companies. But it's still a very large company. Both are very large. But see, Costco is about one-third the price of Walmart. So if you wanted to buy Walmart, you would have to walk on down to the New York Stock Exchange, Wall Street, with almost $300 billion in your pocket. Exactly. That's what the company's worth. We look at the price of the share, but that's not as important as the market capitalization. Now, would you buy either of these companies? Or maybe both? Yeah. Think about it. And as Warren Buffett says, if you'd like to own the entire company, but you can't, nobody's going to buy Walmart. But if you'd like to own that company, go ahead, buy 10 shares or 5 shares or whatever. Slide 34, McDonald's versus Yum. Yum, who brands, who are they? Well, you know who they are. It's Kentucky Fried Rat, Taco Smell, Hell, and Pizza Crap. No, I'm sorry, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Taco Bell, and Pizza Crap. A Hut. You know, folks, there's a whole lot of money to be made selling people sugar, salt, and fat. Yeah, privatize the profits and then socialize the medical problems. Yeah, it's a problem, but hey, it's our society. And you take a look at McDonald's, you see it's selling for $188. You take a look at Yum Brands, and they're selling for a little over $100. Earnings per share for McDonald's, $7.54, $4.69. And so the PEs for these companies are relatively healthy. In fact, some people, the old-timers like me, say, that's pretty high. Not anymore. But which one are investors more excited about? Yes, they're more excited about McDonald's. Not a whole lot more, but more. Look at the book. Wait a minute. What's going on? These companies are negative? Have negative book value? Negative net worth? Right. Really, what do they own? McDonald's and Yum Brands, you know, they don't even own the stores. Maybe they own them, but they don't usually. They are more interested in getting that food in that store, selling it to people, and then making their money. So it would make no sense to even think about liquidating these companies and paying off the debts, because you'd wind up paying out of pocket. And so why are investors willing to spend $188, $199 for a share of McDonald's, over $100 for a share of Yum Brands? Because, again, the company intact is worth a tremendous amount of money because of the fact that people are willing to buy their garbage and put it in their body. I mean, I'm sorry, to buy their food and eat it and give themselves diabetes and arteriosclerosis. Anyway, I'm sorry. I have to stop doing this. I apologize. I'll digress. I ride my bike past one of these places, and the smell is just outrageous, but then people love that smell. They just get excited about that grease. Oh, well. $6, as we said back in chapter one, you know, we're exporting this to the world. $4.64 in dividends per share, $1.68 from Yum Brand. So McDonald's is, you know, no 2.5%. That's not bad. You know, Yum is pretty good, 1.7%. And again, looking at the stock price, you might think, McDonald's is about twice as much as Yum. No, it's the other way around. It's not the other way around. It's much higher than that. If you look at the market capitalization of McDonald's, it's over $145 billion, whereas Yum is still a big company at $31 billion, but much smaller. Actually, what was going on is things have changed quite a bit in the last 10 years, but before that, Yum was doing really well. They were kicking McDonald's butts in China, because it turns out the Chinese like chicken more than they like beef. And then the bird flu hit. The bird flu. What's that? Well, it's the avian something or other. I'm not a medical person, but it's a serious illness. But there's never, and it can be transported from a bird to a human. But there's never been any documented cases of somebody catching avian bird flu from a dead cooked chicken. The chicken has to be alive. But that didn't matter. People are people. And they heard bird flu. They flocked. They flocked away from Yum. But now they're coming back. In fact, their prospects are very good in China. So they split off the company. So now there's two different companies, Yum, and then Yum China, which is just Chinese. You know, do your research. Think about it. Maybe you'd be interested in investing in these companies that are selling garbage. I mean, food to people. Slide 35. My apologies. Not really. Last one. AT&T and Verizon, the duopoly. Yeah, I know. There's Sprint and T-Mobile, but they're much smaller. So these are the two big companies in the United States. And by the way, AT&T is doing its best to move into Mexico. I don't know if you've been down to Mexico, but you see their ads everywhere. So look at these dividends and dividend yield. Well, hang on a minute. Let's get start. Let's start first at the price. AT&T, $32. Verizon, $58. So you might think, oh, Verizon's a whole lot bigger. No, not really. Again, we have to look at the market cap. $2.85, $3.76 for their earnings per share. Look at the PEs. Far lower than anything we've seen before. What are investors talking about, thinking about the prospects for either of these companies? Well, they're not too excited at AT&T. They're okay with Verizon, but not like the previous companies we've seen where Walmart, Costco, right? The book value is far higher in relation to the price than anything we've seen before. Look, AT&T's book value is $25. Their price is $32. So it's actually, you know, pretty darn close in comparison to all the other companies we've seen before. Verizon's is about, what, four times more, but AT&T is only about one and a half, not even 1.3 or 1.2 times more. So investors are not so excited about the prospects for these two companies, are they? No. Dividends per share, $2.04, $2.41 for Verizon. Look at that dividend yield, 6.5% for AT&T, 4.1% for Verizon. Far higher than anything we've seen before, and pretty darn high by today's standards. So investors are buying AT&T and Verizon not for the growth that they represent. They're buying them for the dividends that they're paying. And remember, dividends don't lie. Now, are the dividends guaranteed? No, 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 no. It's not a savings account. And it's not a bond either. Those dividends could be cut at any time. They're paid quarterly in the United States, and in the next quarter, the next 3 months, they could just say, no more dividends. I mean, it's not going to happen with AT&T and Verizon, but it does happen every once in a while. Once a company starts paying dividends, they have basically told themselves in the world, you know, we're going to do most of it. This is most of it, most companies. We're going to do our best to keep paying this dividend so you can rely on us. And when a company cuts its dividend, it's usually a very, very serious issue. Take a look at GE, General Electric, over the last several years. And then look at the market capitalization. Right, they're about the same size. Verizon's a little bit bigger. Both of them are mega cap companies. So, are investors excited about the prospects for these companies? Not really. Would you invest in either? Dividends don't lie. And let me ask you a question. Do you think people ever give up their mobile phones? No. Well, who knows, until something comes along where you don't even need a phone. It's planted into your brain. Anyway, so what we hope you've seen is that the analysis, the numeric analysis about companies, is really not that hard. It's like an onion. You start pulling back layers. What is hard is the prediction for the future. And does anybody know what's going to happen in the future? No, we wouldn't call it the future that then. So what I find is that once people have been explained this, they kind of go, oh, yeah, this is not bad. So that's why Mr. Warren Buffett will say, investing is simple, but it ain't easy. It's simple to take a look at the same data that everybody else is looking at and make your judgments. What is difficult, what is ain't easy, is thinking about what's going to happen in the future. And that's why it's an exciting, but you know, scary, and sometimes very risky proposition. So now, we're going to ask you to do your research. We're going to ask you to research a few companies, do some calculations, and as we said, we hope you find that it's actually pretty interesting, in my humble opinion. And there's a future for you, dear students. The industry needs you. They need more women. They need more bilingual people. They want more minorities. They want ex-military. Why? Because a lot of us are getting old. And the industry understands that diversity is key. Because as we've said, or if we haven't said it, we'll say it again. If you're an insurance company or a brokerage firm in the South Bay and you don't have somebody who speaks Spanish, you're losing business. If you're out in El Cajon and you don't have somebody at your insurance company or your bank who doesn't, if you don't have somebody who speaks Arabic, you're losing business. Tagalog, yes, this is important. Diversity is important. I don't care what any of the Americans or Prometheus say. Okay, so you excited? I hope so, because I love stocks. Can you determine that? Yes. In our next presentation, we'll discuss some investment theories and stock strategies, and some of it's a little silly, and other is actually very important. So we hope you're enjoying our discussion about stocks. Remember that if this piques your interest, think about Business 123, Introduction to Investments, where we spend the entire semester on investments. And remember that there is a future for you in the industry. Thank you so much for being in our class, dear students. We are so proud of you. Don't give up now. Oh, no. The best is yet to come.